We've already said
good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is legendary guitarist Denny Lane, founding member of the Moody Blues and Paul McCartney and Wings. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of the Moody Blues, and he is going to be playing locally on April 14th, a show at the Bull Run in Shirley. Denny, welcome to the show. I'm genuinely excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. It was good.
Let's get some business out of the way. You're going to be playing locally on April 14th at the Bull Run in Shirley. Is that still true?
That's still true, yeah. I'm doing the Band on the Run album and the...
You are?
Yeah, and the Moody Blues first album I was on, which is called The Magnificent Moodies, which is basically a lot of tracks off that anyway.
Let me get this straight. You're going to do the entire Band on the Run album?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I've been asked to do albums in the past, and it never really occurred to me. But since it was, you know, the anniversary last year or something, then we decided to do it, and it went down well, so we're doing it. We're not exactly a tribute band, but we are doing our versions of it, you know. So it's yeah. And now, the Moody Blues thing is based on the fact that the Moody Blues album was re-released as a remastered and as a CD box set, and it was about 30 tracks on it. So we're doing some of the stuff off that. So it's a good show. People like it.
Now, there's rumors that there's going to be a massive release of the Wings albums.
Yeah.
A box set. Is that still happening?
I don't know. I really don't know much about that. It's just... You know, it goes on without me being there. But everything else has been released. I think the last album to come is this one that's actually tomorrow night. I'm performing it with some of the Wings members at the Fest for Beatle Fans in New Jersey. And, you know, that's the Back to the Egg album.
Wow. And,
yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's always good to have remasters. I think it's... It shows me what we were doing, actually, more. You hear more, yeah. You know, you revisit this stuff, and it's pretty good.
Can I ask you about your early days?
Yeah,
sure. I'm old enough to really appreciate. Is it true that you were inspired by Django Reinhardt?
Well, I was inspired by many jazz players at the time. You know, I was, as a kid. My sisters were all into sorts of different music, and my parents. So, piano players, jazz guitarists, Django was... really up there with the tops, yeah. But as I say, you know, I was inspired by a lot of singer-songwriters of the day. Skiffle.
Yeah.
Buddy Holly, you know, obviously Elvis and Jerry Lee and all those other people, and Chuck Berry later on. But originally, I was into jazz and blues and stuff like that, yeah.
So I've read that your first band, I think your earliest band, was Denny Lane and the Diplomats, and you had Bev Bevan from ELO in there?
That's right.
Talk to me about that band. I love talking about people's first bands. So was this a classic teenage garage band?
It wasn't really. And in those days, we didn't call them garage bands, but I know what you're saying. It's, you know, it was a fact that there were a lot of bands in Birmingham after the war. A lot of people were encouraged to get into music, which was one way of getting out of the, you know, the poverty.
Yeah,
and, and we were very inspired by the American Forces Network station in Germany, actually Luxembourg. And we picked up on a lot of that music that you were sending those guys. So we brought that back to America with our versions of it. And the Diplomats was about my third band. I was in a band in school, you know, I was just kind of guesting on a few things. And then I finally had my own band, which is Diplomats. We did quite well in Birmingham, but Birmingham didn't have a scene. It didn't have a music business. So we worked a little bit on the Brum Beat, which is a magazine, and then we started to sort of get a little bit of exposure. And then everybody was working except me. And, you know, yeah, they had a day job. So I wanted to turn professional. Two of the Moodies came back from Germany, offered me the job, so I took it. But we didn't go back to Germany. We actually got discovered and went to London. So that's the story of how that all came about. But yeah, Bev then went on to form, you know, ELO. So, you know, it was a good bunch of people. But as I say, they didn't want to turn professional at the time.
Now, the original name for the Moody Blues was M plus B5?
The M and B5.
What does that mean?
It means... I hate saying this because it kills a few, you know, it kills the romanticism of it. But M and B stands for Mitchells and Butlers, which is a brewery in Birmingham. Yeah. See what I mean? Everybody laughs. Kind of blows it out of the water. But yeah, we were going to be sponsored by these people, and that never worked. So we turned it into Moody Blues. But that, we were a blues band at the time, so it made sense that that's where the name would go, you know, into that direction. And, of course, you know, they changed when I left, but we were going more into R&B and expanding from the blues when I was in there, you know. With the Go Now hit and the album.
Go Now is still a hugely recognized song. I mean, that's a giant hit.
It is.
You've played that during Wings concerts.
Well, Paul liked it, and he thought, you know, he was trying to push me out to the front as well. We did tour with the Beatles, the very first Beatles, second Beatles British tour.
Wow.
And we became friends in those days. So, I mean...
So, what can you talk a little bit about the scene in Britain at that time? Because here in America, we were calling the music British Invasion music. You were just calling it music. But it was for us here, it was like a huge breath of fresh air. It was like... It was changing the music radically. All the bands at the time when you started out with the Moody Blues, it was huge here. What was it like in Britain in Europe?
Again, it was... So there was a lot of work in Europe, you know, simply because of the German, you know, forces network. There was a lot of work over there. There was a lot of bands. So, I mean, this was it. We just, you know, we copied the American styles based on a lot of our own original sort of folk and stuff backgrounds. But anyway, we were all like in it together. There's a lot of bands. Very few actually made it, but it was a lot of bands. And so all the bands that made it came down to London to be, you know, to be discovered. Or they came down there because they were discovered, and that's where the scene was. So we all hung out in the clubs together. We all went to see bands together. Paul and I went to see Jimi Hendrix, I remember that. Me and John went to see The Loving Spoonful. Yeah, you know, we would go out. I mean, we went to Dylan's hotel one night and talked to him. But we would sort of see all the American bands coming over to be a part of that scene as well. You know, even the Eagles came to be discovered. So we were like all friends and working on the same venues, really. There's a place called the Marquee we used to do with the Yardbirds and Jeff Beck and Rob.
Oh, man.
People like that. So we were part of that blues scene in London and did all that circuit. So, and we backed some of the American, you know, black artists who came over, Sonny Boy Williamson, Little Walter, people like that.
Oh, wow.
And then we were kind of, you know, part of that scene. So it really was like everybody worked together, and we had a lot of parties, and everybody was pretty friendly, you know. It was friendly competition, really. But anyway, that was like, and then the clothes, you know, Portobello Road, all the antiques, and everything kind of came together all the same time, you know. There was a lot of, it was kind of a renaissance of not just music, but other things as well.
Well, it was huge in fashion. I mean, there was film that was going on. There was writing. It was like and we were looking at it from afar over here, and it seemed like some kind of wild thing that was going on that was not happening here.
Well, yeah, because it was a youthful, you know, thing. A lot of it came from France too. You know, we played a lot in France, and the fashion and a lot of that came from France and Italy, and we would steal all their ideas for clothes and whatever, and Germany, you know. So we were part of that whole section of people that were kind of trying to be creative, I suppose, and that's what you guys picked up on over here, and you know, it was inspirational to everyone.
Now, you left the Moody Blues in 66, And then you formed a really a sort of short-lived band, the Electric String Band. Talk to me about that.
Well, Electric String Band was really my, you know, I had some time to, I wanted to do something different. And I had some time hanging around London. And I was in going to a lot of the folk clubs. And I met a lot of people in the folk world down there. So, you know, I put this song together called Say You Don't Mind. And Denny Cordell, who's produced the first Moody's album, also produced a lot of other big stuff like White a Shade of Pale. And
yep.
Love from my friends, Joe Cocker. He was a friend of mine right from the beginning. And he produced this song for me. And John Paul Jones did the string part. And we had a couple of folk people on it, you know. And so it was a little sort of minor hit for me at that time. And around that idea, the string parts, we put a band together. I auditioned people from the Royal Academy, and we put this little band together to go on the road. So for about a year, I was going around doing that. But it was very difficult because these guys were always going off and doing classical shows around the world, you know.
Yeah.
So I had Viv Prince from the Pretty Things on drums, which is quite different, but... Yeah, and it worked. So the last gig I did was a Jimi Hendrix show in London, and Paul and John and Peter Asher in the audience. So that kind of led to him calling me a few months later. But, after that, I went with Ginger Baker.
Okay, wait, and slow down, because I want to talk about all of that. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is legendary guitarist Denny Lane, founding member of the Moody Blues and Paul McCartney and Wings, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is going to be playing right here in Massachusetts at Stowe at Bull Run in Shirley on April 14th. Now, there was this band. You're not going to believe this, but I actually had people email me and message me that they wanted me to ask you about the band Balls. And and actually, people want to know if there was going to be a reunion.
Well, that was a kind of an intermediate thing that was put together by the same management that had the Moody Blues. Actually, the one guy left that management, Tony Secunda, and started Wizard Records and brought the Move down. So the Move were from Birmingham, my hometown. The bass player was Trevor Burton. So me and Trevor became very good friends at that time, and we did start to, you know, get a few ideas down together. We got a couple of other people in, Alan White from another band up in Newcastle, and Steve Gibbons was there for a little while, but we only started to record with Jimmy Miller, and there was a lot of, problems going on there. So we didn't really get off the ground. We did a couple of tracks. We did a few gigs. But then, you know, I went on to do other things. So it was really just an intermediate thing that we tried and never really carried it on. But, again, you know, it was a good little thing that we did in the time, at the time. That could have been better. But the actual management side of it and recording side of it, we were having problems with the people there. I won't go into it. But there was all that same old stuff of, you know, signing and management and where's the money going, stuff like that.
Yep.
So, I mean, a lot of that kind of drifted away. But then I went with Alan and Trevor into Ginger Baker's Air Force.
Yeah, talk to me about that, because that's fascinating. And, again, people who don't know the history of that, that was amazing. Yeah. It was the Ginger Baker Air Force. Well, who was in there?
Wow, I mean, a 15-piece band, you know, Steve Winwood, Chris Wood, you know, all these people. I mean, and it was and Graham Bond and people like that. Because Ginger was in a band, when I first met Ginger, it was in a band called the Graham Bond Organization. Mm-hmm. That was like an organ-based jazz, you know, with Jack Bruce. And so he was on the Chuck Berry tour with the Moody Blues, and that's how I met them. So that was way before. And so that was go nowadays. So anyway, Ginger was putting together Blind Faith. I was down at the Traffic's Cottage when that was going on, jamming around with him. And, you know, that didn't get off the ground too well. So he finally called me and said, you know, do you want to, I'm putting a band together. Do you want to be in it? So that was how it came. And, of course, everybody was, you know, in to start with. Then everybody went off and did their own thing. Then Ginger got sick, and that was put on hold. But at the time, you know, it was good fun. We toured Europe and England and things like that. And it was a good situation, really. But you could come and go, you know, whereas I kind of went off and waited around for it to come back together, and it didn't. So then I got the call from Paul.
Yeah, talk to me about that. It's 1971. How did the whole Paul McCartney Wings thing start, and how did you become part of that? Now, apparently you knew Paul for a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So we knew the Beatles really well, and that's that he called me based on, I think, seeing me with that that string band, you know, the Jimi Hendrix show. So he wanted to do something different. I wanted to do so. I was sitting around waiting for my guys to come back from wherever they were touring, and I got the call and went up to Scotland. So, I mean, we didn't have any problems getting into doing something because we already knew each other. We'd already been friends for years. So, you know, it just fell together because we were up in Scotland, away from the press, you know, sort of taking it our time and taking it easy at the same time, working on new material. So it was just about that. And again, we tried. We started doing something in universities. We'd just turn up and just to play.
Without any previous announcement? You would just show up?
Yeah. We didn't want any press involved. We just turned up to universities and played. So we get used to playing in front of an audience, and it was fun. It started out, you know, kind of raw, but we got through it.
Initially, was it just the three of you?
No, well, it was, plus Linda. It was me, Paul, and Denny Sywall.
Okay.
And Linda. And then Henry came along. You know, we got Henry out of the Joe Cocker Band. And then we toured that in Europe. So that was pretty good fun. And then right up to a band on the run, that band was going. And then that was it. Started again.
Now, you played like a little bit of everything in Wings. You did lead and rhythm guitar, backing vocals and lead vocals, keyboards, bass guitar, woodwinds. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I'm not, you know, a multi-instrumentalist in a sense, but I can get a tune out of anything. You know, he's just done a few things. Yeah. We all could do that. And Paul was also playing guitar, and of course, you know, we kind of mixed it up, but we did a lot of overdubbing, and that's how we got, you know, we had a lot of studio free time, and that's how we got into all that. So, you know, when he's playing piano on stage, I'd play bass, stuff like that. But, yeah, it was all kind of a, you know, it was like a melting pot of ideas, really. And we all, it was based around the recording a lot. So we got into all different instruments.
Can I talk to you about recording Band on the Run? Because I've heard that got down to just Paul, Linda, and you that basically did the recording for Band on the Run. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, it was me and Paul. You know, Linda was the harmonies, but she didn't play ours. But
now, there's a lot of stories about the recording of Band on the Run, that it was a bit of a disaster. That you were in, what, Lagos, Nigeria, and they got all sorts of stuff happened.
Not a lot. It wasn't a problem for us. It was just that we got there and the equipment was a bit old. It was all hand-me-downs from EMI equipment. It was in EMI Studios. And it was very primitive. But we had the help of local musicians and all that encouraging us. And, you know, Ginger Baker lived out there too. So we were inspired by a lot of the music out there. Although we didn't go there to copy the music, it's always good to be around, you know, different influences. And so we went into the studio with Jeff Emmerich, of course, who was, you know, the Beatles engineer anyway, and he did some of stuff with Air London. He was our engineer on that stuff with George Martin. So we already had a team, and Paul just played drums, I played guitar, and we put the tracks down. So we didn't have Denny and Henry with us, so although we'd rehearsed to a certain degree some of these songs before we left, we had some ideas about how the songs would go, and we just put them down, and then we kind of overdubbed them more or less when we got back to London with Tony Visconti getting involved with the strings and the brass and stuff like that. But we got a great feel, just the two of us.
I was going to ask you, did you realize while you were recording it that you were recording one of the great albums of all time?
No, you never know that.
You must have had a sense that things were clicking and it sounded good.
Well, we were enjoying doing it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right.
The challenge was there. We enjoyed the fact that we, you know, we had to get an album done, and we enjoyed just playing and jamming it. Paul loves playing the drums anyway. And so, you know, we kind of got a good feel thing going on. And that's always a good influence.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's going to look like it's going to be a good album once you get the basics down and it sounds good, you know, just the feel. But that's one thing we had on that album.
Everything about that album is amazing, including the cover of the album is one of the great iconic album covers of all time.
Well, it's got that way. What we did was invite a few friends to come and dress up in prison at uniforms and have a picture.
Come on. The list of people who are on that album cover besides you and the rest of the band is just like amazing. You got Christopher Lee on there. You got all these people. James Coburn. Clement Freud, who was actually related to Sigmund Freud.
That's right.
It's
Kenny, the comedian.
Yeah. Michael Parkinson, the journalist.
they were all friends in a way. Or we knew some of them. And then the rest of them, like Coburn was in town, knocking around, and we heard he was in town. So we invited who we thought might be cool, that's all. And they were very, you know, had a lot of fun to make that picture. It was a lot of fun hanging out with all those guys. Yeah.
I have to believe, I mean, everything about that album makes it one of the classic rock albums of all time. Yeah. From the cover down. But you've had so many great songs with Wings, too. Mull of Kintyre, can you talk to me about that?
Well, I always put that down to being Paul's song originally because he came up with the chorus. And, you know, the chorus is the hook. We were living in Kintyre County at the time, and the Mull of Kintyre is just a little village, really. The Mull mean a peninsula, and he called it the Mull of Kintyre. So it was never called that before.
Huh.
Like that. No, it was just a mull where the hotel was and where the band stayed and some of that. And then the Kintyre's the county. So he called it that. We had reservations about it because of writing a Scottish song, you know, because you don't know what they're going to feel about that. But we went out the next day and, you know, I contributed a lot to the lyrics and we finished the song. Then we brought in the Campbelltown Pipe Band, which changed the key halfway through, which gave it another, you know, arrangement change, which added to the excitement of it. And it was a huge hit. What can I say? Yeah, we released it at Christmas, did a lot of TV.
It was the number one selling single in 1984.
At that time, yeah. And it was huge. It wasn't released in America as a single. Don't ask me why.
I have no idea why either. Yeah,
but it was on the hits album, so a lot of people know it. You know, I go out and do a lot of solo shows now, and I, you know, I kind of talk about all the songs and that I've been part of or written or co-written or whatever, and that story always comes up. You know, and people know that song over here.
So. Yeah. Talk to me about the breakup of Wings, and how did you emotionally react to that? Was that hard?
I wasn't that, you know, I wasn't that upset when Paul got done in Japan, although it meant, you know, it was the second time we'd had our visas revoked, which meant that we couldn't go out on the road. And that was a problem for me, because I felt like, you know, Japan would have been a great market.
Yeah.
But I still went on to do those other couple of albums with him, but, you know, inviting friends and guest musicians in. Which was a new direction, really. So I didn't mind that. But at the same time, you know, I wanted to get my own thing together as well. I got to that point where I'd been doing some recording myself. I had an album to promote, so I went to the south of France, the Meadem Festival, and kind of drifted apart. But we didn't really fall out, none of that. It was just really just I went and did my thing.
Now, you've recorded as a solo artist, actually, from early time in your career. You've always found time to do your own music.
Yeah.
And so you've been doing it right up until today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had a lot of space between. I mean, I haven't put an album out now for quite a long time, but you know, I've got stuff in the can I haven't released. I've I've always kind of been involved in writing songs and putting albums out, especially in the 80s.
Yeah.
Where I did a lot of overdubs and, you know, kind of got involved with that era, really, electronic music and all sorts of stuff. I hung out with Tony Clark, who was the Moody Blues producer, and you know, got into recording my own albums. So I've got a lot of stuff. I do some of that stuff live. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, I think it was your last solo release, The Blue Musician, 2008.
No, that was a compilation of a couple of other albums that I did, President Records, and I did other stuff with those people, with other people. But you know, I have I want to remaster all that stuff, so I'm having a few problems at getting hold of it all to do it again. But you know, the fact that I recorded those albums and wrote that stuff, it's always there. You know, it's extra stuff. But I do want to remaster that stuff and release it. Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, Denny, and I hope everybody shows up at the show. This is going to be great. Again, April 14th, The Bull Run in Shirley, Band on the Run, and the Moody Blues' first album. Are you kidding me? How can you not want to go? That's huge, man. That's really huge.
Great.
Well, I want to thank you. My guest tonight has been the legendary guitarist, Denny Lane, founding member of the Moody Blues, Paul McCartney and Wings. And inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he's going to be here in the States playing. You should get out and see it. Denny, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Mark. I enjoy it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.